Kim Pagano flow. Wake up, hit the dial, yeah, it's time to go. Start your day right. It's the Kim Pagano Show. She's the voice of Ventura, heart of the coast. With the good news only, yeah, she doing the most. Talking life, love, health, and hustle. Bringing in guests who flex that muscle. From authors to docs, she's bridging the gap. Kim got the real talk, never no cap. Tune in, let the wisdom flow. Start your morning with the Kim Pagano Show. It's positive vibes, it's purpose, it's real. It's coffee and truth with that local appeal. She got that laugh, that light that lift you up. Whether you're driving or sipping from your morning cup, she'll ask the hard cues, still keep it kind. Dropping gems every time that you press rewind. Community strong, she's built that lane. With heart and hustle running through her vein. It's not just a show, it's a vibe, a tribe. So tell your whole crew, yeah, it's time to subscribe. Tune in, let the wisdom flow. Start your morning with the Kim Pagano Show. It's positive vibes, it's purpose, it's real. It's coffee and truth with that local appeal. So when the world feels heavy and the skies feel gray, Kim's got a message to brighten. Start your morning with the Kim Pagano Show. It's positive vibes, it's purpose, it's real. It's coffee and truth with that local appeal. So when the world feels heavy and the skies feel gray, Kim's got a message to brighten.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life. I hope that you had an incredible weekend. And, of course, my first guest has been on my show plenty of times. And, of course, he has been in the industry 50 years of investigating claims, consulting on complex disputes, and serving as an expert witness and training the next generation of claims professional. And of course, we're talking about Fred Fisher. And of course, he is, I've talked to him several times, and he really is thinking that the industry has been hijacked. And we're going to find out a little bit more about that. Fred, thank you so much for coming back.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You must be a glutton for punishment to have me on again.
I love it. I love it. You know what? I learn something new every single time we talk, and I think it's so great that you've been in the industry for so long. First of all, let's just kind of start 50 years ago. What took you into this industry?
Well, when you graduate college with a social science field major, you can, chances are the only job you're going to get is selling life insurance.
There you go. And how did it do for you?
Well, I knew that that was going to be a problem. So I was already enrolled in going to law school at night. And I did that intentionally simply because back in 1972 or so, everybody wanted to be a lawyer. Everybody grew up with Perry Mason. Oh, my God, I'm going to save the world. And as a result, you know, unless you graduated from a top law school and in the top 10% of your class, chances are it's going to be very difficult for you to get a job. Whereas if you went to law school at night, you could be working in the legal community during the day, and then those people had a 90% placement ratio because they usually were hired by the people they were working for if they passed the bar after graduation. So I thought, I like the odds of that much better. So that's what I did. I was already enrolled in law school, and my first job was life insurance, and I was like, okay, I can't stand that. And one thing led to another, and ultimately I got a job. This is my third year of law school, I guess. Third or fourth. Yeah, it was the third year of four years. And I got a job as a professional liability claim adjuster. This was in March 15th, 1975. So
wow,
a good reason.
Remember the day, the time, the month. I love that.
Oh, are you kidding? Beware the Ides of March is all I can tell you. There's a legitimate reason they say that. But and it was fascinating work. I had already spent a year or so working as a law clerk in a law firm, so I was familiar with the defense industry somewhat. And this was a whole different world. Number one, I had no idea this stuff was going on. Number two, we were dealing with a policy form to insure professionals that was written on what's called a claims-made basis. I had never heard of that either. So that was different than the typical insurance policy that businesses and individuals would buy, which was written on an occurrence basis, meaning the accident had to take place during the policy term. And that's something everybody's used to. And, you know, I got in my car accident yesterday. Thank God I just renewed my auto insurance, that sort of thing. But claims-made insurance was a whole new ballgame. And there was a legitimate reason for it. And it was complex even back then. It only had two conditions that, you know, the claim had to be first made against the insured during the policy term. And, you know, at the time you applied for the coverage, you weren't aware of any problem. You weren't expecting a lawsuit, in other words. And so that was it. And it got more complex from there. But in any event, it was fascinating work, and I loved it, and I was good at it. When I graduated law school, I had 11 job offers.
Congratulations, yeah.
Yeah, mostly from insurance defense firm, and you know, I wasn't a dummy. I knew that why they wanted me, because I had contacts with insurance companies. I knew how to evaluate witnesses. I knew how to investigate cases. I knew how to preserve evidence, you know, blah, blah, negotiate settlements, that sort of thing. The only thing I wasn't doing was going to court. And so that was an opportunity, but the company I was working for had just opened an office in Los Angeles, and they offered me the opportunity to be its manager. And with certain clients, we actually were acting as what's called a third-party administrator, where we were acting like the claim department of the insurance company, whereas not only were we investigating claims, but we had settlement authority up to a certain level, and we had the ability to use a hired defense counsel to defend the policyholder. You know, but of course, it had to be subject to an approved list, but, you know, that was the role. And so the bottom line was I took a job in L.A., and the difference was I could take the position as being a junior associate at some law firm and take orders, or I could take the position and give them.
So which one would I want? Okay. Let me ask you, bring us up to today. You definitely feel like the industry has been hijacked. Talk to us about that.
Well, number one, there's fewer insurance companies around because they've all been acquired by, bigger companies. We're having a terrible merger and acquisition situation going on. Beasley, for instance, a British-based company, was just acquired by Chubb. That's a big deal. And you've seen this market consolidation like crazy. And so there's fewer and fewer insurance companies, which means they've got a lot more and a lot more power, despite the fact they're heavily regulated, or at least supposedly. Number two, the model is changing. People have forgotten what insurance was all about. Insurance was about a bunch of people getting together that all have the same risks and hazards, pooling some money to put it into a pot. In the event some member of the group has a problem, has a loss, you know, whether it was a fire or whatever, there'd be money in the pool to help bring that person and put him back in the position he was in before the loss. That was the basic concept.
Okay.
That was the basic.
I never even knew that, so that's interesting right there. Okay.
And so it doesn't matter whether it's farmers or ship owners or what have you, you all have similar hazards you're facing. Why don't we put some money in a pool and take care of each other? And that's how it all started. And that was very rigidly regulated because, in essence, you're giving somebody money now in the hopes that if some particular event takes place, the money will be there to help you recover.
Correct. And nowadays, not so much, right?
Well, they changed the model. For one thing, the claim department has always been the profit center of the company. And it's perceived, unfortunately, by MBAs and accountants who don't know nothing about insurance these days, it's perceived as a cost center because that's where the money is spent. So they, like any other business, the accounting department, all they do is spending money and pay bills. And we have to control that. We have to set rules on what's going to be allowed. Nobody's going out for lunch every day and buying a $200 bottle of wine. Forget about it. Well, that's not what the claim department function is. The claim department function is basically to investigate a claim. That is statutory. It's required. Investigate a claim. Act in good faith. Look to see if the facts support coverage. If they do, you pay it. If you don't, you can fight it. That's oversimplification, but that's what it boils down to. And it's just as true when you're dealing with an environmental claim as it is dealing with a car accident. That's the basics. Was the insured at fault? How badly damaged is the injured party? And let's settle it and get on with it. And unfortunately, that's not happening anymore. First of all, a lot of insurance companies aren't even investigating claims. They're using artificial intelligence to assess damages, which may or may not be accurate. Number two, they're evaluating. They're telling their policyholder or a third party, you supply us with the information we need to assess, and we'll tell you whether we're going to pay you. That's not investigation. Claims are right. not being investigated properly. They're not being developed quickly. And as a result, I would imagine that many insurance companies are probably under-reserved, meaning insurance companies are supposed to post a reserve. How much do we think we're ultimately going to pay on this matter? And they have to post that. It's an accounting function for most, but still, the money's got to be there. And so they have to post a reserve. But a lot of claims today are immediately sent out to counsel. Counsel is not counsel's job to investigate and develop the claim. That used to be the claim department's job. We'll go out, we'll investigate, we'll get as much facts as we can. In my world, as a claim adjuster, and I did it for 20 years before I became a wholesale insurance broker, but for 20 years, that's exactly what we did. We had the claim as fully factually developed as we could with evidence obtained, documents obtained, statements obtained. We did that in 90 days or less, which meant the reserves could be more accurately set. Now, were we able to necessarily meet with and interview the plaintiff? Sometimes. Sometimes not. Depended on the attorney. His attitude was, well, I'll let you take a statement, but then you're going to waive your right to take his deposition later if we have to file suit. And our attitude was, we're not waiving anything. So either you want to give us the opportunity to hear his side of the story and possibly settle the case, or we're going to have no choice but fight this or do it through discovery. Ultimately, insurance companies thought, well, it's way too expensive to do all the time. Why don't we just send everything to lawyers who charge more, but their job is not to develop the facts. Their job is to create a record, a legal record, which means that everything is going to be done through discovery. They're going to send out interrogatories. They're going to send out requests for admissions. The same is going to happen in reverse. They're going to take depositions. That all takes time. Number two, most courts now require everybody meet and confer and see if they can get their own schedule together. And if not, you know, the court will do it, and they'll issue what's called a scheduling order. That could take 6 months to a year just to get a scheduling order on what discovery must take place and what's the deadline, so to speak.
Right.
Meanwhile, so there goes the 90 days figuring out what the claim is all about.
Right.
Which means which means you don't have information upon which to base your reserve, claim reserve. Which means most insurance companies, I would guess, are probably under-reserved.
Wow. Okay. I mean, like, we're talking about the fires, the floods, just a simple accident. All those things have changed now, right? And now I know that you talk also about that the insurance actually have to evaluate their own claims, right?
Oh, yes. But you see, in all fairness, it's not all bad. I mean, why send somebody out that can only do two or three of these or four of these a day to inspect a house, to get on a ladder and look at the roof or whatever, when you can use a drone? Now,
right.
Is that always perfect? No. They might even be looking at the wrong house, or maybe the shade is wrong, and so they're misinterpreting what they see on the roof. So it's not perfect, but it is efficient. Yeah, and if it's done right, it could be very accurate, and that can save some costs, no question about it. I do want to be fair about that. But you can't rely 100% on it. You're still obligated to investigate the claim. That's what the Fair Claim Statute says. National Association of Insurance Commissioners put out a model act for fair claim practices. Most, if not all, states have adopted it in some form. And, you know, it requires that you investigate the claim. And it requires that you have 45 days to determine and make a decision as to your coverage. Now, you could there are ways in which you can extend that, but you have to send out a letter saying we need more time and here's what we need to get. And so there's a lot of give and take on both sides. I don't want to paint a really bad picture. Which ultimately, though, is that some accountants have decided, why should we go through all that mess? Why should we keep a fully staffed claim department and investigate the claims and develop the losses when we can just hire lawyers to help us draft policy language that will be legally enforceable, that where we can limit the type of claims we pay from what we used to pay? And now you got courts saying an insurance policy is not illusory if it only pays one type of claim. Just one.
Wow, that says a lot. So let me ask you, first of all, we haven't even talked about this, but you have a book, and, of course, it's called Claims Made Insurance, the Policy That Changed the Industry. How do our listeners get that? And tell us kind of a little bit about that.
Well, number one, they can buy it on Amazon. They could also look it up under my name, Frederick, F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C-K, J, period, Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R. Just put that in the search line on Amazon, and you'll see the book. It's also available. There's links to it on my website, which is at www.fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R, C as in Charlie, G as in George, .com, FisherCG.com. There's a link to the book there as well. This book was written for the consumer. This book was written for people who, like you, provide a service of some kind to others, maybe for a fee or what have you. But you're providing a service. You're putting something out there on the internet. You are a podcaster. And those type of policies, unlike your car insurance, unlike your homeowner insurance, unlike your general liability insurance, those are written out on the occurrence basis, meaning the accident has to take place during the policy term. The problem with professionals, however, is that when they commit an error, it's not like running a red light where you hurt somebody immediately. It's not like, you know, somebody slips and falls in your driveway and somebody is hurt immediately. They may not know how badly, but at least they were hurt. That has to take place during the policy term. But with professionals, when an architect does their engineering calculations and they get the load factor wrong on a pedestrian bridge over a major highway or over, you know, a runway or something, or under a runway, you know, you're not going to know about it, about that mistake until something really bad happens. And that could take a year, that could take a month, it could take 20 years.
Wow.
And then somebody is hurt, and then the lawsuits fly. And the problem with that is, how do you, from an actuarial standpoint, actuaries try and predict the future based on what's happened in the past. They look at past claims. They try and say, okay, you know, we can see what's going on here. If we're going to write this kind of insurance, you know, they have all these really complicated formulas to apply, and they come up, hopefully, with a pricing thing that's going to work. And so they're constantly guessing. But when you have, how do you deal with something where you're trying to insure an architect and you don't know how what the claims are going to be because they could be out there for a long time? So
right.
That's why the concept of writing a policy that is triggered not by when you made the mistake and hurt somebody, it's when somebody actually is hurt and decides to make a claim against you. And the same thing is true of lawyers. If they draft your will and your trust, nobody's going to know that they made an error that could have serious consequences until you're dead.
Right.
And that could be tomorrow. That could be an hour. That could be in 30 years. And in addition, the professional might have to keep what happened. And the professional, of course, isn't a problem. They're going to have to keep a copy of all their occurrence-based insurance policies and all their files forever.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
The files are the evidence. So that's how the concept of claims made came along, is that what's triggering the policy is when somebody over whom you have no control decides to make a claim against you.
Got it. I remember one of the things that, Fred, one of the things that you always say, the gotchas that get you.
The gotchas that'll get you. Oh, my God, yes. We filed for trademark on that, and we've got preliminary approval, but we haven't gotten the final green light yet. But the gotchas that'll get you is very clever policy language, very subtle policy language that is put in these policies, giving the insurance company the right to deny claims and getting away with it.
Wow, wow, wow.
And it's being done intentionally. I've got several articles written by lawyers saying just that. And one of the most recent ones, I don't know if I brought it up in the last time we chatted, but some of the recent one is the Pharmacia case. Are you familiar with that?
No.
No? Pharmacia Corp is a huge, pharmaceutical company. And typical of somebody that size, they don't buy liability insurance or product liability insurance that starts out what we call first dollar. They probably have a deductible. It's called a self-insured retention, but it's like a deductible, which means their deductible probably is $5 to $10 million, and it could be higher. Then they buy what's called excess insurance, and they can buy what's called a tower of excess insurance into the stratosphere, hundreds of millions of dollars. But you don't get one insurance company to do that. You have, because insurance companies are going to write excess insurance in 10, 20, and maybe a few at $30 million layers. So if you want to get a $500 million worth of coverage or $1 billion worth of coverage in excess, you're going to have a lot of insurance companies stacked on top of each other. And that's called a tower. In addition, you cannot commit to any kind of settlement that involves insurance company money without getting their prior approval. So that means that, number one, if you get involved in litigation, you better put them all on notice to let them know this is going on, and then they can decide how closely they want to monitor it. But one thing's for sure. If you want to enter into a $200 million settlement, you better have their prior approval, because otherwise they're not going to pay you. They're not going to put the money on the table to settle the case. And that's what happened here. But here's what happened. They entered into a $207 million settlement. They did get prior approval from all the insurance companies who were going to have to put that money on the table. There's $160 million on the table. The carrier that had the next layer of excess was Twin City Fire. They're a wholly owned subsidiary of Hartford, so we're not even talking some fly-by-night company here. We're talking a really well-branded, well-recognized name, Hartford Insurance Group. They started at the $160 million level. Doesn't matter how high they went. But the point is, there was $160 million on the table. It's now your turn, Twin City. Put your money there. And they said, wait a minute. We've got a sentence in our policy, not an endorsement, mind you. It was in the policy form itself. And it had two conditions. The first condition was, all underlying insurance companies had to have exhausted their limits. I don't have a problem with that. There has to be $160 million on the table before our policy kicks in. Well, guess what? The money was there. So the underlying insurance companies had tendered their limits. It was the second half of the sentence that just still takes my breath away. Not only did all underlying insurers have to have exhausted their limits, all underlying insurers, not the policyholder, mind you, the insurance companies, had to have admitted liability.
And so it was already like a fixed case, basically, right? Yep.
Well, they were settling it. Didn't matter. Yeah. And when you settle a case, nobody admits liability. How many times have we heard, we're paying out $1 billion to settle this. We just want to move on and put this behind us. But we're not. We didn't do anything wrong. We're not admitting liability. Nobody admits liability in a settlement. As a matter of fact, the insurance policies themselves caution the insured not to admit liability without prior approval. But this doesn't apply to the insured, the policyholder. This condition applied to the insurance companies. Have you ever heard of an insurance company having to admit liability?
No, that's just insane. Exactly. Fred, this is why I keep having you back, because I love talking to you. I love learning from you. How do my listeners find you and find your website?
Well, the website is www.fishercg.com, fisherconsultinggroup.com, so it's FisherCG. There are a lot of articles there you can download. You can also reach me through there. My email address is there. You can even set up a calendar app if you want to chat. I do review policies for professionals, and I would urge you to read your policies. And one other thing I would urge, never, 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 never buy on price.
Mm-hmm.
We're being brainwashed to think that all the policies are the same, and you'll save money with us. Well, number one, all policies are not the same. That is a lie. But they never say that. Your consumer is led to believe that, but it's not true. When you buy on price, you're giving something up.
I love it. Thank you so much, Fred. Have a really great rest of your day. Please share our show with everyone and download our podcast, and I look forward to having you back.
Oh, Kim, anytime. Thank you so much. My best wishes to you. And like I said, for anybody out there having trouble sleeping, believe me, there's plenty of articles on our website. You can read them. Knock it right out.
I love it. Thank you so much, Fred. Take care. Have a great day.
You're listening to The Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would.
Are you worried your perfect customers are finding you online, then clicking away because your website makes your business look outdated? Imagine this, having a website that reflects your expertise and professionalism. Peace of mind knowing your website is kept up to date and secure. A managed hosting plan, especially for your website. If you're ready to have all that you imagined, visit webweaversconsulting.com. For WordPress website packages, maintenance plans, and hosting plans, Webweavers Consulting will make your website work for you so you can focus on making a difference in your own unique way. That's webweaversconsulting.com.
Are you ready to empower your child with the skills they need to safely enjoy the water? Kim O'Brien with Survival Swim with Kim, Infant Aquatics, teaches self-rescue swim skills to children of all ages. Self-rescue skills can save a child's life if they accidentally fall into the water. After losing her daughter to drowning, Kim became a certified survival swim instructor to help families in Ventura County protect their children. Survival Swim with Kim teaches kids 6 months and up how to roll and float independently. Don't wait. Check out survivalswimwithkim.com. That's survivalswimwithkim.com, or call Kim at 805-620-7177. That's 805-620-7177.
Did you know stem cell injections can cost thousands of dollars with no guaranteed results? Here's a simple, affordable phototherapy-packed system that supports your body's natural renewal process. No injections, no chemicals, and no drugs. This light-based wellness technology has been studied for decades and shown to support energy, balance, recovery, and overall vitality naturally. For about $99, try a 30-day supply designed to help your body do what it does best, restore and renew itself. Many people share experiences of feeling more energetic, focused, and balanced after incorporating this technology into their wellness routine. If you'd like to learn more, text your name to 805-407-4302 for educational information. That's 805-407-4302. Or you can go to Lynn's website for more info, liveyounger.com/GreekLynn.
When you dine at Manhattan of Camarillo, located in the heart of the Santa Rosa Valley, you'll be able to take a step back in time with Manhattan's Supper Club Italian Dining. Enjoy live entertainment while eating and relaxing with an extensive wine list. Tuesday and Thursday, receive a complimentary bottle of house wine with a purchase of two entrees from the regular menu. They also invite you to stop by and enjoy their heated Madison Beer Garden with a full bar and craft beer selections. Don't forget about Manhattan's private wine room. Holding up to 50 people, it's perfect for any professional or special occasion. Call today to make your reservations and book your next private party. It's 805-388-5550. That's 805-388-5550. Or go to manhattanofcamarillo.com, located right off the 101 freeway in Pleasant Valley.
If you're a business owner or looking to be one, put Littlefoot Construction on the top of your list. Littlefoot Construction specializes in restaurant remodels, tenant improvements, office remodels. Call Littlefoot Construction with all your commercial and industrial needs. Littlefoot Construction works with big or small businesses. Or even if it's a dream, Littlefoot Construction will make your vision come true. Call Littlefoot Construction at 805-491-2759. That's 805-491-2759 for all your construction needs.
Located in the heart of Thousand Oaks, Marcello Ristorante brings Italy to your table with classic pastas, homemade pizzas, and all your Italian favorites. Life's busy, we make it easy. Order online for quick pickup or delivery and enjoy authentic flavors in just a few clicks. Want to dine out? Relax in our warm, welcoming restaurant, the perfect spot for family dinners, date nights, or catching up with friends. Marcello Ristorante, Italian Delight, anytime. Make your reservations at 805-371-4367. Visit us at 140 West Hillcrest Drive in Thousand Oaks or order online today. Mangia!
It's showtime.
Now, back to the Kim Pagano Show on KVTA.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the radio on the Kim Pagano Show. And, of course, I've got Selena Lin. She's managing partner, strategy, M&A, and transformational and thought leader, IBM Consulting. Selena, I'm excited because I think AI is like one of my new best friends, okay, first of all, right? We're going to find out that it's really quickly emerging as a critical growth engine of most of our businesses right now, right?
Exactly, 100%. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And so talk to us a little bit about, as leaders look towards 2030, that's scary, 2030, oh my gosh. What is the biggest challenge C-suite executives face, and what should they prioritize now to succeed later?
Yeah, so we actually did a study with the IBM Institute for Business Value. We surveyed more than 2,000 executives on what will drive success for them over the next 4 years. And the biggest challenge that we see there is the following. Most leaders would agree that AI will have a profound impact on their business. Like you said, AI is going to be a best friend for everyone out there, but few mm-hmm. can identify what that specific impact will be. And so the biggest challenge is closing that gap between believing in AI's potential and actually turning it into results. And that's the real challenge, this disconnect between expectation and impact. Now,
okay. So let me go ahead.
No, please.
I'm sorry. I was all excited to ask you a question, but go ahead. I want to hear.
I was just going to say, you had asked about what should they prioritize now to succeed later. I would just say three things there. One is treat AI as a strategic imperative. Don't make it a side technology initiative, which means reimagine how you do work and how your workflows operate, and include AI from the start. Don't patch it into old processes. Second, and this is a tough one, shift from certainty to adaptability. And what I mean by that is more than half of the executives in our survey said it's the speed of making decisions that matters more than waiting for the perfect data. So be adaptable, learn as you go. And then finally, I would say prioritize people, because AI is as much about people as it is about technology. And so how you hire, skill, and govern AI will shape whether your workforce can actually take advantage of the technology.
Wow, I love that. I love that. And you know what? I mean, as you're saying that, you know, when I ask it a question, and it gives me the answer like immediately, and you want to almost like, okay, let's go with it. And then you have that, you know, second thought, is this right? Is this wrong? I mean, it just gives you, I mean, the speed behind it is amazing. So I totally agree with you on that. Let me ask you this. How is AI changing the way organizations compete and grow? Because that's, to me, the biggest thing.
Absolutely. And this is where actually it's not just the biggest thing. It's where we're seeing a real shift, right, in how businesses use AI to compete. So on one hand, Kim, we all know that AI can help you be more efficient, right, and more productive and help companies do things faster and cheaper. But it's not just about that, right? It's about when you do that and you free up cost savings, you use it to create new products, to drive growth, to bring those products to market faster and with a better customer experience. And the way that organizations are doing this is not just by using the same AI models that everyone else uses. I mean, there's a lot of access, as you know. The real competitive advantage and the way companies will grow is using AI that's unique to them. It's built on their distinctive data, their workflows, their intellectual property. And that's what sets them apart, because then others can't copy it, right? It becomes unique just to them.
Wow, I love that. You know what? You're so right. The more, you know, it kind of goes back to, you remember when we first came out with computers and you would, you know, get a CRM or whatever, and you're like, oh, this is great. Oh, wait, I have to put all this information in, you know? And it's like, there's nothing on there until you put all your information on it. And that's the same thing with AI. It needs to know everything about you, and almost like you have to be totally you know, just to be able to explain everything about who you are, your business, how it runs, so that it can give you what you need. Do you agree?
Absolutely. The more data and context you give it, the better the output will be. But remember, it's not just about the AI, it's about people. So even when it produces the output, you have to bring judgment to it. You've got to bring creativity, problem solving, ethics, to make sure it's being used the right way. So it doesn't work in isolation. It works alongside you and me.
So dig deeper into that one. I love that.
Okay, yeah, sure. So if you think about AI, right, it's the quintessential specialist, right? It can do tasks like produce reports and do analysis at a rate and pace that we can't replicate. But what that means is humans become the orchestrators. We provide the strategy. We make the critical decisions. We provide the context and the ethics and ensure that that technology is being used responsibly and effectively. And in fact, 2/3 of executives already say that mindset will matter more than specific skills going forward. And by the way, employees are ready. 63% of them say that they're willing to work with an AI agent, and nearly half say that they'd even be comfortable being managed by one. And so what that means for leaders is that they've got to acknowledge that the nature of work is changing really, really fast. Roles won't be around as long. Skills won't exist at the end of the decade that are today. And so it's important that we train for new roles and new skills. And as our leaders in companies, they've got to be very clear about where AI informs decisions and where people remain accountable. And the governance needs to evolve as that happens and as AI becomes part of our everyday work.
Wow, that really, okay. As AI becomes more deeply embedded in our daily work, what should leaders be thinking about in terms of decision making and skills? I know we talked a little bit about that, but
yeah.
I mean, are we going to lose, you know, is there going to be people losing their jobs because of it? We need to have it enhance our jobs, not lose our jobs, correct?
Correct. And as everything that we just talked about, all of it signals the fact that the human AI collaboration, it's evolving, right? It's not at the end state there. It's continuing to evolve. And as we embed AI across the enterprise, we need to create a culture where continuous learning is built directly into daily work. Now, your point around, it needs to be, augmenting us, not taking jobs away. I think that debate about AI versus jobs is often framed incorrectly. When we get productivity savings from AI, that drives growth. And when you have growth, it creates new roles, even as routine tasks evolve. And so we've been saying this at IBM for years, that AI is going to transform every job. And the way to think about it, Kim, is new roles will be created, many more will be transformed, and some will transition away. And so what matters is taking the steps to equip the students out there and workers with the skills they need to partner effectively with AI technologies.
Okay, I like it. And for organizations that are early in their AI journey, what guidance would you share the most that matters?
I would say three things to them, and I think we've touched on them, but to summarize it, I would say speed matters. Don't wait for the perfect clarity. Move fast, learn as you grow, and put the right governance and people in place from the start. Second, the real value doesn't come from just adding AI to your existing processes. Actually rethink and reimagine how work gets done. And by the way, that's true whether you're early in the journey or pushing past the experimentation phase. And then finally, and you can imagine this is the most critical, at least from my perspective, is that AI success is ultimately about your workforce. So employees need time. Give them the time, give them the training, support them in building new skills. Make sure it's embedded in their day-to-day work and it's a continuous learning, which is part of your business model.
I love that. I love that a lot. Selena, where can my listeners find out more about this? This was really interesting. I'd love to have you back and talk again further, deeper.
I would love to come back. So people can find more about what we talked. It's part of the Enterprise in 2030 study, but there's also a lot of great thought leadership on AI at IBM.com/IBV. IBM.com/IBV as in Bob, V as in Victor.
There you go. Well, thanks again. Have a great day. I love this. I learned a little bit more about it. And again, please download our podcast if you missed any part of this. And have a great day. Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Kim. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, that was some really good stuff and some things that we learned there. And let's bring our next guest on.
Welcome back to the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life. And of course, my next guest, I'm really excited to talk with her, Dr. Nicole Avena. And she's actually the first to study sugar addiction. And I hope I don't fall under this category because there's sometimes I just feel like I need to have that last little bite of sugar. So, but I know that's almost like the biggest addiction. We're going to find out a little bit more. Let's welcome Dr. Avena. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life and Business.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, and of course, your newest book, Sugarless. I'm like, okay. It's really hard for people to do that, but I know how addicting and actually how bad sugar is for us, correct?
Yes. And, I have somewhat of an interesting history how I got to this point of writing this book. I am a professor. I do research in the laboratory, and I've been studying sugar and how it affects the brain and health for over 20 years now. And I started doing research way back when I was doing my PhD at Princeton on how sugar affected the brain and whether or not sugar could be addictive, because so many people seem to be struggling with cutting back on eating sugar. And one of the things that we discovered through our research, which really led me to write the book, was that sugar can be addictive. It can meet all the criteria as an addictive substance. And on top of that, we're learning more and more every day about the dangers that sugar poses to our health. It's not just our physical health, like, diabetes and cardiovascular disease and things like that, but also our mental health. There's so much research now that suggests that sugar is linked to our cognitive functioning. It's also linked to our mood. cutting back on it is really just a great way to improve your health.
I love that. I mean, you don't even, you know, when I'm probably going to date myself here, but it's like you think you're getting cavities. But now you were just mentioning, excuse me, all of those things that it's affecting. And so talk to us about it. Like, is there a amount that we should have or we shouldn't have anything? Because, you know, like you go to the store and there's a lot of like sugarless candies now. Is that good for you or what are we supposed to eat?
Yeah, it's a tough question, right? And
yeah.
I think that a lot of people are confused, and that's really, you know, another reason why I wanted to write the book was to help people to figure all this out, because there is a lot to understand
okay.
and a lot to unpack when trying to figure out what you want to eat. What we should eat in terms of sugar, the recommendations are that we have no more than 6 to 8 teaspoons of sugar every day. But the reality is that most Americans on average are consuming 22 teaspoons of added sugar each day. So
wow.
regardless of your body weight or health status, probably consuming more sugar than is recommended for good health. So you really do want to try to reduce it. And, you know, one of the reasons why I titled the book Sugar Less is because it's about reducing it. It's not about completely giving it up or going
okay.
cold turkey and never having it again, because that's not sustainable. And I think a lot of people have already tried that and it didn't work.
Yeah, I like that at least you said that. That's a big deal, because when you, it's almost like the word diet. You say the word diet and you're hungry, you know? So it's the same thing. If you go, you cannot have any more sugar, you know, you're like, where's just one candy? I know I've got something hidden somewhere, you know?
Yeah, I think it speaks to our inner child. You know how if you tell a kid you can't have this and they just
yeah,
want it even more?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is not a diet book. This is really just a way to reevaluate your relationship with food. I look at it as a health book. It's a way to really just, you know, identify where sugars are in your diet, figure out how you can replace them with other alternatives, and really just work to reduce your dependence on sugar, because that's the thing that many people are struggling with.
Okay. I like that. And Dr. Avina, let me ask you. So when they say that, you know, natural sugar, meaning like fruits and, you know, that kind of thing, is that still bad for you? Is that considered sugar? Where do we draw the line?
That's such a great question. And the answer is that fruits are your best friend when it comes
okay.
to reducing sugar. Now, fruit contains sugar, but it is also containing it in a way that is put together with fiber and other nutrients, so that it's in an amount that our bodies can recognize and comprehend. If you look at a lot of the processed foods that are available these days, they have combinations of ingredients that are just so foreign to what our body and our brain is accustomed to
mm-hmm.
considering as a food, and they contain so much added sugar in amounts that you would never ever see in nature. And so, yes, we want to cut back on the added sugar, but fruit is not considered added sugar. That's actually one of the things that you can really use to your benefit if you're getting cravings, because it can help you to satisfy that sweet tooth, but it's going to be in a way that's going to be manageable and actually beneficial to your health.
Well, good to know. Okay, cool. So that's good. Now, what about brown sugar, refined sugar, or any of those sugars? Does that change the theory at all?
Sugar is sugar. Those are sugars.
Okay.
Added
okay.
sugar is added sugar. Yeah. And again, it's marketing in some ways. Like, you know, if it's raw sugar, it sounds healthier, right?
Right.
It's really not. I mean, when it comes to the addiction, it's sugar. And I think that really just reducing our reliance on all added sugars is the best way to go.
Okay, good. Now my question to you is, your book, first of all, congratulations. This isn't your first book. You've actually written a couple books, correct?
Yes, I have a couple other books under my belt. One of the books that I have been writing, or I guess maybe one of my favorites, if I had to pick one, is a book called What to Eat When You're Pregnant, which is all about nutrition during pregnancy and, you know, how we can promote healthy eating during pregnancy as opposed to kind of telling pregnant women just don't eat this and don't eat that.
Right. Oh, I love that. Okay. Well, I'll have to have you back on to talk about that. But of course, your new book, Sugarless, what are we going to find in there? And what could crave those sweet cravings that we want? And will it tell us that?
Well, you know, the book, I think, is just really jam-packed with so much helpful information for people. So it has a really detailed discussion of where sugars came from. How did they get into our diet? You know, how did we go from Victorian era where, you know, maybe people had sugar twice a year on a special occasion around the holidays to now having sugar pretty much in every food product that we have available? Mm-hmm. And understanding the different forms of sugar. Like you asked some great questions about, you know, what about brown sugar? What about raw sugar? You know, breaking all that down to understand the differences between these different types of sweeteners and how they affect our brain and our body health. And then also looking at the addiction piece and, you know, how does sugar produce addiction? And in the second half of the book, I really get into the practical part where I help people to break their addiction to sugar. How do you deal with the cravings? How do you deal with the withdrawal? How do you reduce the sugar in your diet? What are the steps that you can take? And you'll find there's lots of great information in addition to recipes. There's 30 sugarless recipes that I developed that are in the book that are easy to make. They're not meant to be, you know, these laborious things where you're spending hours baking.
Right.
They are simple recipes, simple ingredients, and just really delicious ways to get
started.
Give us
what is one, you don't have to do the whole recipe, but what is one that you share in there?
Well, I think one of my favorites is the sugarless barbecue sauce because condiments are really the killer for a lot of people. Yeah.
Oh, that's and, probably my weakness right there because I love sauces on everything. So, okay.
I do too. Yeah, I do too. And I have a recipe for sugarless barbecue sauce, sugarless creamy Caesar dressing because I am a huge Caesar dressing fan.
Me too. And then, okay, I can't wait.
Yeah, and then also my other favorite one from the dessert side of things is strawberry shortcake parfait, which is really easy to make, super delicious, and it's a great way to satisfy that sweet urge if you're having for, you know, a piece of cake or something like that.
I love it. Can't wait. And I know that you guys sent me an extra book, so I want to, like, share that with my listeners. And all you have to do is call in right now, 805-419-0008, 419-0008. We'd love to get one of those in your hands. But where can my listeners find your books? I'm sure they're everywhere, right?
Yeah, the Sugarless is out now in stores. It's everywhere books are sold. You can also find it on Amazon at barnesandnobles.com. And you can also find links to my other books on my website, drnicoleavina.com. And if anyone wants to follow me on social, you can find me at Dr. Nicole Avina.
Oh, great. Well, let's definitely connect so I can share you and you can share me. And my last question, stevia, are any of those ones, do you recommend anything like that? Or what do you do, just cold turkey?
Well, you know what? I think stevia and monk fruit and a lot of these alternative sweeteners, they can be a good crutch. They can really help people to start going and get off of the added sugar. But at the end of the day, you don't want to rely on them because it's sort of like methadone to heroin. You don't want to be on it for the rest of your life. But it's a good way to get started. So, yeah, I think they're
okay.
Good.
So it's a bridge way to success, I guess you would say, correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, again, I love that you're doing this. It, you know, when you talk about I know that addictions, okay, you say that actually sugar is more than cocaine, nicotine, and alcohol. Is that right?
Well, there's been several research studies that have looked at this and shown that sugar can produce an addiction-like response that is more powerful than actual drugs of abuse, believe it or not, like cocaine. And I think it's because it's so pervasive. And also, remember, we're biologically programmed to love sugar. We're born having a sweet tooth. Breast milk tastes sweet. Baby formula tastes sweet. We evolved in a way that, you know, sweetness in nature is usually coded with safety. So fruits and berries taste sweet because they're good for us. So eat them. And the problem is now, you know, just because something's sweet doesn't mean it's good for us. It doesn't mean it's healthy because it's become so dominant in our society.
And now, does honey fall under that?
Honey is same way. It's still, again, it's sugar. And so I say that if we are looking to have something from nature that's sweet, you really want to focus on things like fruit. Honey is a bit of an outlier. Yeah. Honey's, you know, honey has benefits. It's antifungal. It can help if you have allergies or colds. So there are health benefits linked to it. But I'd say if you're struggling with a sugar addiction, you don't want to just start, you know, stop on honey. You want to really try to focus on reducing your dependence on sweetness in general.
I love it. Again, Dr. Nicole Avena, thank you so much for joining us here on the Kim Pagano Show, The Brighter Side of Life. And, of course, your newest book is Sugarless. And we will get a copy out to whoever calls in right now. Again, 419-0008. And I thank you so much. Please share our show with everyone. And thank you for writing this book.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Have a great rest of your day. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Kim Pagano Show. I hope that you got some message that you needed to hear out of everything that we talked about. I also do want to remind you of our next mixer that is happening, April 23rd, and that is 5 to 8 in Newberry Park. And of course, I end all of our shows with a moment of happiness. And today's is create a morning routine, one that you can start your day in a positive way. Have a great rest of your day, and I'll talk to you next week.
Are you ready to empower your child with the skills they need to safely enjoy the water? Kim O'Brien with Survival Swim with Kim, Infant Aquatics, teaches self-rescue swim skills to children of all ages. Self-rescue skills can save a child's life if they accidentally fall into the water. After losing her daughter to drowning, Kim became a certified survival swim instructor to help families in Ventura County protect their children. Survival Swim with Kim teaches kids 6 months and up how to roll and float independently. Don't wait. Check out survivalswimwithkim.com. That's survivalswimwithkim.com or call Kim at 805-620-7177. That's 805-620-7177.
When you dine at Manhattan of Camarillo, located in the heart of the Santa Rosa Valley, you'll be able to take a step back in time with Manhattan's Supper Club Italian Dining. Enjoy live entertainment while eating and relaxing with an extensive wine list. Tuesday and Thursday receive a complimentary bottle of house wine with the purchase of two entrees from their regular menu. They also invite you to stop by and enjoy their heated Madison Beer Garden with a full bar and craft beer selections. Don't forget about Manhattan's private wine room. Holding up to 50 people, it's perfect for any professional or special occasion. Call today to make your reservations and book your next private party. That's 805-388-5550. That's 805-388-5550. Or go to manhattanofcamarillo.com, located right off the 101 freeway in Pleasant Valley.
Did you know stem cell injections can cost thousands of dollars with no guaranteed results? Here's a simple, affordable phototherapy-packed system that supports your body's natural renewal process. No injections, no chemicals, and no drugs. This light-based wellness technology has been studied for decades and shown to support energy, balance, recovery, and overall vitality naturally. For about $99, try a 30-day supply designed to help your body do what it does best, restore and renew itself. Many people share experiences of feeling more energetic, focused, and balanced after incorporating this technology into their wellness routine. If you'd like to learn more, text your name to 805-407-4302 for educational information. That's 805-407-4302. Or you can go to Lynn's website for more info, liveyounger.com/GreekLynn.